Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya. We got a lot of boxing here to talk. It's going to be a busy week starting today, Friday, Saturday. Boxing. But we're going to get, first off, we're going to recap what happened this past weekend on HBO. If you didn't have a chance, I did give my take about the fight on the next round with Steve Kim. I was pitching for Mr. Gable Montoya because he was on the plane on their way back to the Golden State. So, Gabriel Rosado gets in with David Lemieux, and honestly, you know, I guess the question is how good is David Lemieux? Because he obviously was going in there with a guy that we could pretty much say is a veteran, but really tough as nails, you know. The big question is could he was he going to be able to withstand the punishment that Lemieux was going to bring him? You know, the one thing that I've noticed about Gabriel Rosado, and this was on the HBO card, the triple header, is that if you don't give him anything for him to be honest, he will come forward. But if you give him something to think about, he really gets on his bicycle and he kind of falls out of his game plan. He doesn't box to outpoint you. He boxes to survive. I don't know if you got that sense, Gabriel, but I've seen that a couple times out of him that once he gets clipped pretty hard where it rings the bell in his head, he reverts from trying to use his size, trying to use combinations to survival mode.
Oh, yeah, there was no doubt. I mean, I didn't know if you were asking me that question now. Yeah, there was no question that once Rosado knew that Lemieux could kind of punch in between, catch him in, you know, within combinations and hurt him, he was way on his bike. And I think a lot of the plan was to box and punch, like you had pointed out. But, I mean, it just became very apparent that Lemieux was going to hunt him down. And David was, you know, it's never going to be super smooth, you know. I think his transition from defense to offense has gotten better, and it's not so stuck in like all blocking or all attacking. Lemieux has learned how to shoot the jab and change levels with it, like pump it twice to the stomach or pump it twice upstairs and get in close. When he tires, his jab goes away, unfortunately. And I saw that, you know, that's why I think it took him a couple rounds longer than I thought it would to get Gabe Rosado out of there. I had him in 8. He got him out of there, you know, in 10. But I thought I thought it was a nice solid win for Lemieux. I think Gabe Rosado was a guy that we've built. People were really excited about him, you know, losing to Triple G, you know, in the way, you know, they talk about, well, he was sick and so he couldn't get it done, and it's kind of this, the lore of Triple G. Well, here's another measuring stick, and I think, you know, and I didn't find the fight that close. I mean, I thought Lemieux gave up some rounds. But ultimately, it was a David Lemieux old one, you know, where, you know, he did get hit with some rights and he got rocked with some uppercuts. That's going to be a problem for him. He's very stationary. His head, there's no, like, for lack of a better word, there's no funk to his game. You know, he's kind of like a gladiator in there, like a Michael Katsidis type, who's kind of measuring and moving in and pressuring, but he's not doing a lot. You know, if you can really kind of change some angles and slide around him and come up with an uppercut, come up underneath, or off to the side, he's going to have a lot of trouble. Like Sergio Mora was saying, like, dude, I'd give this guy angles all day and I'd hit him hard enough to respect me, basically. And I don't think that he would beat David Lemieux, but I think he could, and I think he would give him a lot of trouble. That'd be a fight I would be willing to see.
Well, here's the difference
forward.
Right. Here's the difference with Sergio Mora, though, is that Mora would box, use his jab, and when you get in close with him, he would obviously grab you. He's made some success by doing that. Because he kind of eliminates you trying to get in your inside punching. But you know the thing with Rosado, and I can't really recall because you know I watched the fight twice and then I haven't watched it. I've been trying to catch up with tape, but other fights are going to be happening this weekend. But I'm not sure if the corner did tell him or even acknowledge that he was successful with that left hook. Every time he threw it, he landed on Lemieux, and even Lemieux was landing with his left hook. But it also was. Was it the fact that Lemieux's left hook was much stronger that it made Rosado gun-shy from it? It's almost like he didn't want to return or even try to counter. To me, it was trying to run him into the deeper rounds, see if he would gas out, which he did. I think it was like the fifth or sixth round or like maybe the sixth or seventh round where Lemieux did slow down. But what he did was he continued to cut the ring off, and it made Rosado just basically be on his bicycle,
yep.
But he never took advantage of it. You know,
they game planned for a guy with wide shots. You know, the wide right hand is what they were thinking of. And Lemieux's right is still kind of awkwardly, you know, and a little bit wide, but not always. You know, there were some straight shots in there. And you're right, the left hook, Lemieux, I think that he could land it. That was the shot that kind of wobbled him right off the bat and was like, wait a minute. There's something else in the arsenal here that we didn't game plan for. It's almost like the way Devin Alexander reacted to Paul, Sean Porter having a really compact inside left hook. Malignaggi, to some degree as well, reacted to it that way. It was a fight I actually just watched right before the show, Malignaggi versus Porter. And it's interesting, he whispers in Sean Porter's ear when they ask Paulie what he said, and it's just, you know, don't make it that I lost to, like, you know, a fighter less than a champion, you know, like be a great fighter, you know. He has all the tools to be great. And then now look at Paulie, all the things he says about Porter. But I digress. In this fight, you know, I don't think – let me ask you this. Do you feel like you've got the Triple G, his next opponent, should he get past Martin Murray? Is that next, or where do you go with this opponent? Is he the winner of Korobov Lee?
Well, you know what? I mean, we talked about this on the next round. And I obviously said that If I was Triple G, or if I was any of the other named middleweight guys and I was managing them, obviously I would automatically attack David Lemieux. I would offer a bigger sum of money to entice him, to bring him into the ring, just because the fact is, why allow this kid? Because I got to admit here, Gabriel, Lemieux looked better, he looked smarter, he looked strong, and he also looked a little bit more patient. Not the way he's looked in the past, you know. Right away comes the thoughts to fight fans, it's going to be the Rubio fight, the Marcos Antonio Rubio fight. He was still young, he was still kind of just throwing out his whole load because he was taking guys out of there within two or three rounds. He believed the hype. This time around, you got more of a mature kid going in there, understanding that he's still got some flaws to iron out. So do you throw him in with the beast? I don't think so. I still think that there's some sharpening to do with Lemieux. I would say weigh it out for the whole 2015. Still take on some uncomers, some equal level fighters with him so that you can polish yourself and be prepared. But I still think that I think there's a strong possibility that they throw the bait and see if they hook him on there and reel him in. There's a strong possibility. And you know what? I think a lot of fight fans would probably kind of, I wouldn't say a whole lot, I would say a very small percentage, though, would probably sway with Lemieux because of the punching power. The power is there. I don't think there's denying that this kid's got some real middleweight power. In turn, though, Gennady's got 168 power, though. That's the only thing that's scary. He's a middleweight with 168 power.
This kind of saddens me to say, but on another hand, it doesn't. Give me David Lemieux versus James Kirkland next year. 154 to 160.
I don't think – well, you know what, though? I would take it, too. But, you know, I think it depends if – which I don't really know. I don't know. I mean, we've heard – Ann Wolf say she's not going to work with them anymore. But then they get back together. They got a mother and son relationship. I wonder if she gets back into the mix and this fight is offered to Kirtland and his promoter, which is 50 Cent. I have a strong feeling that they would turn it down at a 160 limit. You know, I don't know whether they'll make it at a catch limit, but I don't see it happening at 160 limit if Ann Wolf is involved. What do you think?
That's a good question. I mean, maybe a 58 fight. Lemieux's got the leverage here. He's a draw. He's the guy, you know, that's going to be selling tickets there. You know, the Pascal Belmonte fight, you know, went terribly as far as, you know, for the promoters. Ends in this weird no contest. And Lemieux was the walkout bout. You know, they put it on the big screen up there, and everybody sat and watched. Lemieux put on a very entertaining performance. I think that he's a guy with upside. I know, you know, he's shown in his loss and in the Alcine fight that he's had, he's vulnerable. But you're right, Dave. He showed a patience. He weathered the storm. You know, HBO goes so crazy anytime somebody lands a punch and a guy, you know, reacts to it like, oh, my God, he's hurt. Like, he wasn't that hurt. You know, I think he was in situations where it's like, you know what, you know, this is a good thing. You know, we're now moving in, you know, the needle's moving into the red. Can I move it back? Can I get control of this fight? Slow the thing down. Don't let the other guy get momentum. And he did those things. It was a very mature performance and professional performance from Lemieux. So you're right. But that's why I think they would probably feed James Kirkland to him. But it would be an interesting fight, you know. And at some point, James blowing up and going back down, he's going to settle in at 60, even though he's really has been a welterweight that should have ended as a 54 and maybe one or two cash out, like great, you know, cash out fights at 160. But that's just not the way the career went.
No, absolutely, you know, and you know, David Lemieux, I want to see him grow. I think that there's a lot of let me tell you this. If I'm a middleweight, I'm looking at him, and I'm going to start coloring in the blanks that he does bring to the table, you know. I mean, there's still things there that, like I said, he does throw so much power, and everything that he throws has conviction to it, that when he doesn't land, you could see it becomes the wheels start slowly slowing down. And like I go back again, Rosado back in the sixth, I think, like I said, either the fifth or sixth or sixth or seventh, Lemieux was slowing down, but Rosado was already in survival mode. So he didn't take the opportunity to take advantage of what Lemieux was doing, which was giving him rounds to rest. He was looking, you know, he was giving himself rounds to rest, and Rosado was still fresh. But at the same time, in his mind, it wasn't. He was a beaten fighter that was just trying to survive long enough to make the distance so that he can claim he didn't get stopped, you know. But Lemieux's got that in him right now still, where he's still got to figure out how to pace himself a little bit more, because that's still there. It's there. You know, he does lose air in the tire. So any other middleweight should take a look at that. Also see that he does still walk in sometimes without throwing a jab. He likes to walk in. He needs himself in range to throw big punches. You can outbox the kid. It's there. The writing is on the wall. Rosado did show that. The only problem Rosado did not show was when you boxed out of there, you should have countered. He never did any of that. What he did was just basically try to get away from the big punches. What did you think about Hank Lundy? What was your thoughts about that fight? And fight fans, we're gonna be patching you guys in right now here on Leaving the Ring. You can call in 347-215-7598. Here on Leaving the Ring, I think we lost Gabriel. I'm not really sure yet if we lost him here. Hopefully he calls right back in. Okay, hold on. He says he's back. Let's Gabe, you there?
Yes, sir. Sorry about that.
Had no problem. I was asking
connection.
About
I had to switch over.
No, yeah, I was listening. Asking about Hank Lundy. What do you think about him?
I think I'd rather see him more than Delorme, you know. I thought Delorme was, you know, kind of just fragile and getting knocked around. You know, he had a nice early plan, but he didn't sustain it. And Lundy is a guy, I think it was a couple more rounds, Lundy gets him out of there. You know, he came on a little bit too late, I think. He's a raw, rough-and-tumble guy that's always going to be fun. I don't know how high the ceiling is, but I know that when Hank Lundy fights, it's fun. You know, it's going to be a hotly contested affair.
You know, I got to tell you, I mean, when he fought John Molina Jr., which John Molina has always been that wild card where his punch is what gets him out of situations. You can outbox the guy, but just any given moment, if he clips you just right, just sweet on that chin, you're out of there. And that's what happened with Hank Lundy, you know, but he always had this really raw talent about him. You know, if he got past the trash talking, the cockiness, you could really see that there's something there with Hank Lundy. Now, how does he get any better? I thought with with Tomas that he showed the maturity that I had mentioned before last week he was going to bring to the ring. The thing with DeMarne is that my thing is with him, I kind of see him like he's on borrowed time, Gabe. I don't know what you think, but to me, he's like almost on borrowed time. You know, he's getting the win, but it's so close, you know, like it's almost there that at any day, even with the right opponent that's not supposed to win but can do something that can add that extra spark for his night could just take that all away from him. What do you think?
Yeah, he's. I think that's a great way to put it. Borrowed time, you know. It's just like I watch him and I'm like, I just felt like he was ready to go late. At first I liked what he was being brought out. You know, I liked the aggression. As things started to get hot, I'm like, all right, this is what I want to know about the guy. And then he just started running and just trying to get away. And it was like Gabe Rosado, but if he'd been winning, you know. And I was like, nah, dude, I want to see, you know, a guy like Wendy who's like going for it. That's what I want to see, or a guy that kind of turned back the tide instead of kind of just, well, I can probably run around the ring for 6 minutes and you know, wear down the clock. That's not what I want to see. So I came away from that, but Centeno versus De La Rosa, I didn't expect that. Did you? The one punch shot?
Absolutely not.
That was pretty beautiful.
The jab is what set it up. Do you see that jab first that landed on De La Rosa? Right there, I was like, whoa, where did that come from? I got to tell you this, and this is kind of a cliche that, you know, when you compare fighters with the fighters, you know, fighters from the past to today, it's a cliche. I hate when people do that. But I got to tell you this, just for that simple glimpse with that jab there, I really honestly was like, dude, he almost has the Oscar De La Hoya jab. It was sticking out there and it was working. The problem was he wasn't able to sustain it. He wasn't able to keep it there. So he had to use other tools. He had to take a break, take a step back. The one thing that worries me about Centeno is he is growing into his body. And I think Eric Brown has really done a fantastic job so far what he's done with them. But what they have to work on is to make him realize he's not a small guy. Why are you trying to fight in the pocket all the time? He needs to get away from that. He makes the fight easier for the opponent to land combinations on him when he decides to fight in that pocket. It makes no sense. I don't get how these tall guys keep thinking they can be majorly successful. They need to be in the outside. They have to have that leverage, that range, in order to tee off with their power. Being in that pocket, to me, is just spells failure all the way down. He's got to just wake up from that. But other than that, the moves that he did, the counter punching, the jab, staying in the outside, not a lot of movement. He was holding his ground. He was putting his weight behind punches. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, just setting everything up. You're right. I mean, he's still, it's weird. He's still kind of maturing, Hugo, into a man, you know, and he's instead of this kid in this big old body, and you could see it, he's slowly starting to fill out, starting to take the weight better and to have it be more man strength. But he's not even fully mature yet, you know. So I think things are moving around nicely, you know.
You know, I gotta put this in really quick too. When you say he's got the little boy look in a man's body, you know, is you walk into the barber. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you remember this. When you're a kid and your dad takes you to a Saturday morning to get your haircut at the barber, you walk in, they had that little catalog there with all the faces and the hairdos and stuff, and they had the little boy haircut. I look at Hugo and I'm like, dude, how did they make that haircut look so perfect on you like the picture? He's got the little boy haircut. Like, nobody's kind of like, I just want to jump in the ring and mess up his hair. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's it. It's just too perfect, man.
He's like like Mickey Rodriguez, like the perfect hair, no matter how much Birdo hit him. Like, dude's hair would like wobble all over the place and then just come right back. It's pretty awesome. No, I think he's doing well, though. I think he's a good kid. You know, I mean, I knew him a bit in Los Angeles. And enough to say we're friendly, and he's really funny, really nice guy. I mean, we interviewed him when we took Leave It in the Ring on the road down to Port Hueneme, right? And yeah, I mean, I like him. You know, I just think there is still the question. I think Julian Williams, it's going to be incumbent on both of them to kind of stay in the mix. I don't want him to see him. I hope they both keep rising as contenders, because at some point that fight is going to be, it's got to happen.
Right. I think Joel De La Hoya is doing a great job with them. He's moving them at a, you know, it's at a pace where it's enough to say it's a bit risky, but at the same time, it's a bit of finding a little bit more about him. You know, we get a little bit more written on the chalkboard about Centeno. You know, I'm not sure how much more we're going to find out. I kind of suspect that he's going to get a little better, but it's really going to be up to him and how much he kind of absorbs inside himself or what he can do. But I think he's on the right track. You know, he's been kind of filling out where he needs to fit, who he needs to be. And really, if he sticks to the game plan of being the way he was against De La Rosa, I could really see him getting a lot further, especially bringing this new found power that he demonstrated on Saturday night. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We're going to patch in Fight fans in about 5 more minutes here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to talk some boxing with all the callers. The board is filling up with people, so I know you guys are there. We'll get to you, on the line of who's up first. But I was going to mention was who did he go from here? I mean, what does Hugo Centeno do now here, Gabe? What do you think?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it's kind of just stay busy time, you know? He needs to step – I mean, this is a guy that he kind of earned the spot, you know, from – beating Angulo, you know, maybe that's where they were building him towards, was an Angulo type. I don't, you know, I think it would be, you know, maybe you do fight Angulo at this point, even though I don't know what that's, you know, sad to say, I don't know what that's worth. I mean, where do you put him? You know, Centeno, I'm trying to even see where he's ranked right now at 54. He's not, you know, so he's still kind of a prospect. Looking through all the different sanctioning bodies, yeah, at least at 54, you know, he's not. So, I don't know. I just think you just keep him busy, keep him on the schedule, and kind of build towards, you know, this year, getting him ranked, you know, in 2015, getting him, you know, a top level fight. Maybe, you know, Austin Trout, Ishae Smith winner, you know.
Right.
I don't know. That might be too much too soon.
I think this Smith and Laura is a major leap. But let me ask you this. This is the tricky question here, is that the matchmaking was done correctly. The fight plan was done correctly. We got to see a little bit of Centeno with what we haven't seen. It was unveiled for us on Saturday night. But the tricky part is now to continue matching them correctly, where he stays looking explosive, where he keeps the fight fans' interest so that they want more of a demand of him, because the catch now is that if you don't have him come out in a similar style and similar fashion, that immediately you can lose the big fishes, which are the fans, off of that hook. They could easily go back into that pond and go underneath that rock and say, Hugo Centeno, big deal. Doesn't bring power.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, we'll see. I mean, he's a prospect. I mean, I think with Julian Williams, there's unfinished business there, and I think that fight needs to happen. How much each side prizes their guy, you know, I think that's something else. Yeah,
I don't see it happening soon.
I'm surprised it happened the first time, to be perfectly honest.
I think it was one of those things of, we need to make some noise here to see who was the better guy. And they both put it in the bank, you know, and hoped that their bettings, you know, they walked away with the bigger bettings. But it's just one of those things. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving Ring. Let's go down the line. Let's go with area code 310. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 310, you there? Go with the area code 931. You're on live right now on Leaving Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. How you doing? This is Eduardo from Fort Lauderdale.
What's up, brother? How you doing?
What's up, man? How are you?
Hey, what's up? Oh, great. Working on my tan, you know. It's hard. It's hard work out here.
No, I got a question, man. For real, because this weekend has, man, it's a beautiful weekend to be a boxing fan. However, how realistic is the chance that Alexander can pull off the upset win versus Amir Khan? What do you guys think about that?
real realistic. I actually, you know, I gotta say, I mean, let's be honest here. Alexander's not where he's at because he's not a good boxer. He's a good boxer. Mm-hmm. They can't take nothing away from him. You know, he can time Khan, which Danny Garcia was able to do, was time him. Which Prescott was able to do was time him. You know, Amir's a beatable guy. This is not a guy that's chin is like solid. At any given time, I think what makes Amir fun to watch is that at any given time, any moment, even when he's winning, he can lose just in the blink of an eye. And that's what Alexander and them has got to kind of realize, is that the timing is what's going to be the big plus for them, or the major advantage. You know, the way to beat speed is your time speed. And you're going to have to time it with that jab. What do you think, Gabriel?
Yeah, I kind of lean towards Alexander. I mean, it depends on which Khan shows up, you know? I mean, it's weird, you know, I try not to do the this guy beat that guy, so, you know, he's going to beat this guy kind of thing. But, okay, the last time we saw Amir Khan was in May, beating Luiz Colazzo and really beating him up, but going the distance with him. And now, you know, he's facing a guy in Devin Alexander who, you know, he hasn't, you know, been lighting the world on fire, but he hasn't looked like crap. But we wonder, like, what did we really – I was fooled. We all were fooled by Luiz Colazzo beating Victor Ortiz the way he did. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder what to make of that victory. So then you look at Khan, you go, well, wow, he looked great, you know, because he beat Luiz Colazzo, knocked him down, and, you know, looked great in welterweight debut. But before that, it was Julio Diaz and Carlos Molina in fights. I mean, the Molina fight, he looked pretty good, but the Diaz fight, he didn't look that great. So I wonder how good Amir Khan is at this stage, what he is. Whereas Devin Alexander, I mean, he did everything he needed to do against Soto Karas. Lost to Sean Porter, who's a good fighter, and it was a close, tough fight. You know, I don't know. It's an interesting fight. And I just Dave's more like about the technical aspects of it. I'm kind of wondering about what the real depth of each guy is, you know, the strength of their record. Because I think it's going to be that kind of fight. I think it's going to be a guts kind of fight. And I think if it is, I think that Devin Alexander wins it.
Yeah, I agree with you, in particular, because Khan doesn't have the type of style that poses much threat to Alexander, like a Porter or a Bradley, that keeps coming, comes some pressure. And I just don't see Amir Khan being letting loose and just being, like, you know, just letting shots fly. I don't see him doing that. I really don't. I really don't.
You know what? Virgil Hunter still hasn't been able to fix the way Freddie Roach wasn't able to really fix as well, is the jitterness that Amir Khan brings. This guy's really hyper, you know? Nobody's been able to really calm him down and make him kind of slow down. I know he's got fast feet, he's got fast hands, but sometimes his hands are too quick for his feet. They don't match correctly. You know, and that's a struggle that he has within himself. But, and you know, and people always go, they'll point out, like, oh, Virgil Hunter's bringing that hugging style. Is it really Virgil, or is it the fact that Amir can't get himself out of there right away? Because, like I said, his hands finished, but his feet are still there. It's almost like he has to, like, relay a message to his feet. It's like, hey, okay, we're done. Get the hell out of here. So he's like, oh, shit, I'm still here. I got a hug. That's why I say that. There's things in there that Alexander could take advantage of.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, I got one more thing. The one fight that not many people talk about is the Mauricio Herrera. I mean, I don't understand why people are not higher on Mauricio Herrera. I mean, I really don't understand. What's not to like about him?
Oh, I love the kid. I mean, you know, I've talked about him so many times on the show. You know, this is the thing, is that this kid is a guy that really, if you look at Hard Knocks, this guy really moved up the ladder of Hard Knocks of fights, you know. He's fought the who's and the what and the hows. He's a guy that's not supposed to be where he's at. Let's be honest. He doesn't have a punch, but he's got an IQ. And it shows that, you know what, a punch doesn't necessarily get you to the top of the hill. It's the IQ. It's the strategy of to get up those hills. This is something Jose Benavides is really, honestly, I'm very surprised they took this fight so early. But it's really not early, because he's been on the shelf. He's been with Top Rank. And investment, every company needs a business. Every business needs need something out of their investment, and this is what it comes and boils down to, where they're like, hey, it's time to find out if the investment is there and if we're going to make back our money when it comes to Mauricio Herrera. I mean, when it comes to fighting Mauricio Herrera.
Well, so you don't think it's a mistake like Danny Garcia did? You think it's just pretty much see where to gauge him pretty much to see if they're going to keep on investing?
Top rank. I think okay. It is to gauge him, to find out, you know what, hey, do we keep interest in him? Do we keep money in him? Let's not forget, too, there's been some rumors here and there about the relationships between Top Rank, Benavidez, the whole thing, okay? So there's a little bit of, you know, I would have to say some type of animosity where they're like, okay, you know what? These guys want something that they're asking for. Let's give them what they ask for. Let's give them what they wish, you know? Let's see if they can really bite off the chunk and chew it down. We're going to find out Saturday.
Yeah, true. Well, hey, gentlemen, it's been great. Thank you for allowing me on the show, and I'll keep listening.
All right, brother, you take care.
You know, with Benavidez, too, I think you're right on the money there, Dave. I think that he's the Top Rank is seeing exactly what they have. And there has been, it was strange, you know, Benavidez is trained by his father. And I remember being there right when they arrived, I think it was that summer that they arrived, and they were auditioning, basically, by hanging out and training. And I got to see him work with Khan early on in camp. And I was really impressed by Jose. And somewhere along the line, I don't know, Freddie was the guy that was going to be training him. And so it was kind of one of those things, like, they come up from the minors, and then, like, you know, the big guy gets in and, like, let me take over your prospect. I don't know if it was that kind of situation or maybe it was perceived by the dad, but it always seemed like they were kind of leaving and then coming back, and you weren't quite sure what the deal was. I mean, Freddie's just there, you know, and he's successful with Pacquiao, which is interesting. You know, I was thinking about how many fighters can really say they've been, like, knocked stone cold and they stay with their trainer that got them to that point, stay unwavering in their belief with them, and then, like, go right back to fighting, like, top-level competition and start to win again. Like, Freddie had, like, one of the worst losing streaks, remember? And then All of a sudden, they're back. And people say a lot of things. Like Paulie says a lot of things about Pacquiao. But, you know, and I have my own opinions. All those people that argue with me about Pacquiao's cleanliness, just to jump subjects really quick, but nobody really ever asked me my opinion, and I'm not going to give it until my book comes out. But you look at Pacquiao, and that's, you know, he's changed trainers from what, when he left the Philippines to come look for something new, decided it was Freddie, from living in the travel lodge next door to staying with him and, like, look where they are now, getting knocked cold, and then coming back, and now, you know, they are where they're at right now, poised for whatever fight they want next, with the exception of the Mayweather fight, because Floyd don't want any. And you look at Paulie, who, you know, left Ludabella, and a guy that did a really good job with his career, and he just trashes Ludabella. We probably don't know the truth, if you know why he should trash Ludabella. But he can say the things he says about Showtime behind their back and Golden Boy when Richard Schaefer was there and Heyman, that whole thing was in full effect. They're worse than the mob, quote unquote. And then he signs with him. People just keep that stuff in mind when you're kind of weighing all this and looking at a guy like Pacquiao. Integrity speaks for itself. You know, and the way he's treated everybody around him, it should be looked at. You don't see him pointing fingers, and I wonder about people that point fingers and then get quiet when they get them pointed back at them.
Right. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We can talk boxing. You're on Leaving the Ring. Let's patch in another caller here. Let's go with area code 714. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey guys, it's Lenny the Fight Smith.
Lenny, what's up, brother?
Man?
How you doing?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
Doing well, brother.
I just wanted to briefly touch on the Conor Alexander fight. I mean, how many times a day does Floyd pray that Conor wins this fight convincingly? Because if Alexander beats Conor, Floyd's like no option. He's got to fight somebody like Keith Thurman or maybe overpay to try and lure Cotto into a fight next year.
Well, I wonder what his options are. I mean, you look at where the rankings are. Just take a, you know, and And just for the business is divided up. I mean, is it going to be Keith Thurman? Do you roll? I mean, you can't really roll Sean Porter out there. Could you go Kell Brook? Floyd Mayweather, is that a makeable fight and a big enough fight that you could go to England and do it and survive, you know, what you're going to do with having to beat, you know, go away from Cotto Canelo? What are the options? I don't know. What do you think, Dave? I mean, you seem to have more opinions on it than I do. I try not to think about it.
I mean, I look at it like this, you know. It's like, I think the analogy that I made up was, you know, I'm a union guy. Been a union guy for a very long time. But the union is hurting right now in terms of losing bids to non-union guys. And the incentive is that us union guys got to pay the hall, the reps in the office, to go out and look for work. Now, it's a monthly fee. Every month that we got to give them money. Every month we got to make sure it's there, because if we're behind 3 months, you're suspended. After 3 months, they start looking into terminating you, so that when they terminate you, they go, hey, now you need to pay back your intuition in order to get back into the union, right? And I've always said, take away the incentive of money of what they get. Take that away from them. Now the incentive is for them to get off their asses and go bid work and find work for us. It's the same thing with Floyd Mayweather. He's got no incentive to go look for better, bigger fights. Why? Because in a lot of ways, Showtime stuck it up our asses. They left us with the bill. There's no incentive for Floyd to go, I have an urgency for legacy. And I think Keith Thurman put it correctly here today at the press conference, was is guys don't fight for pride anymore. They fight for a paycheck. And Floyd is rightfully so to say, I don't want to fight dangerous guys. Why? When the money's in the bank. So I don't see us really thinking about it, picking who's going to fight next, because there's no reason to. We already paid for the fights that he's going to establish himself in line with in order who he's going to fight. It's his order of choice. It's no longer ours. And I think that's the bottom line. That's the reality. What do you think, Lenny? You're
that's
a lawyer.
It.
You tell us, brother.
That's it, man. I agree. You know what? I think you're right. I think focusing on guys like young guys that are coming up and doing things, like Benavidez taking on Mauricio Herrera. I mean, that blows me away, man. I love seeing guys like that. Like this, a few weeks back when you had Saddam Ali coming up and taking on Abdelgu. Those are dangerous fights that young kind of potential big money prospects are taking on and risking games down the road to kind of do what they're supposed to do. And I love seeing that fight. I'm excited about the Mauricio Herrera-Benavidez fight. I think that's the fight I'm probably the most excited about this weekend. There's a ton of fights, but I think a lot of it is shit. But that Mauricio Herrera-Benavidez fight is exciting, man. I'm stoked for it.
Yeah, it's really exciting. You know, here's my other point, too, is that I think, too, at the same time, with Floyd and the facade that this guy is unbeatable and the O is always going to be there and he's probably going to retire undefeated, I think that's the facade that we now are trying to accept. But the reality is whether it's Khan, whether it's Alexander, whether it's Danny Garcia, whether it's even the possibility that they're grooming up Mauricio Herrera as an opponent, we don't know. But I think the factor is this, is that we are getting some fresh faces. And any given day, there is a strong possibility that a guy that's been reigning for so long can get old overnight. This is boxing. And boxing has its own rules and own regulations of who it's gonna glorify and penalize in the sport. So I think in that sense, we got to look at that as a good thing, that there are guys that are getting the opportunities to get a shot at this so-called pound-for-pound guy that doesn't really want to fight Manny Pacquiao, the one of those dangerous guys that he could face right now in his career and answer his legacy by doing that. So it is what it is. At the same time, I don't really care anymore. You know? But anyways, Lenny, thanks for calling in, brother. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can, 347 215-758-9898. Let's talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Let's talk about this week in fights. Dispatching another fight fan here on Leaving the Ring, Gable. Let's go. Area code 860, and you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? CT.
CT, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
Good, good, bro. I'm enjoying the storm out here. We're getting like 4 inches of water in my front yard, but I need, though. My grass is hella yellow, you know? It's, like, bad, you know? Because over here in Modesto, it gets like 100 plus. But I know there's going to be people in the East Coast like, oh, you big crybabies in California, blah, blah. Dog, I like my tan, okay? I like being a brown Mexican, not a all pale-looking Mexican and stuff, you know? I like that, okay? So, yeah, you call me what you want. But what's on your mind, CC?
There's so many fights to talk about, but I'm going to lower it down to the two most exciting fights that I see, I'm predicting. I actually believe, I know Keith Thurman's fighting some guy that's 40 years old, but I honestly believe, like, this guy, he's going to make it very competitive. Due to the fact that Keith Thurman's had a layoff, and I've seen some tapes of this guy, Bundu, and he's pretty solid. He's very strong.
Yeah, he is.
Very aggressive. I think he's very durable. He can switch from orthodox to southpaw, and I think he's going to get Thurman. I think he's going to be Keith Thurman's biggest test since Chavez. I think it's going to be pretty competitive. What do you guys think about that fight?
I think that fight's really great. Here, let me. You know what? I got to patch in Gable here. I think that fight's great. Here's the thing about Keith, and let me tell you this, man. Because when I talk about Keith Thurman, you know what he brings is a very traditional style. There's really no special effects about him. I think what the track that he's on is something that's very simple, but it's effective. Why? Because most fighters nowadays, if you look at most fighters now, CT, and I think most fight fans will agree with me, but most fighters are trying to find this niche, this extra thing that they can bring where it's going to awe the crowd, where the crowd's going to be like, whoa, he did something I've never seen. Where Keith Thurman's, he's actually very content in keeping the basics in boxing. And the basics are the 1-2-3, go to the body, come back to the head, cut the ring, counterpunch, but always being able to adjust what the other guy is doing. Trying to find the pockets to fill, you know, trying to find those pockets to reach his hand in the pocket and take the money out. That's what I like about Keith. So as long as Keith is able to do that, even with this run with Chavez, if you remember with Chavez, who's going to be facing Bradley, he was having some tough times there for about 4 or 5 rounds. But as soon as he weathered that, and as soon as he was able to figure out, hey, Chavez is only going to do this one particular thing over and over, maybe add a little here and there. But if I'm able to nullify that, I could probably get this kid out of there, or I'll win the fight. Gabriel, what do you think?
That's very interesting. It's kind of like what you're describing is what Pacquiao did with Rios. You know, it was a very simple game plan, very simple moves, just 1-2-3, you know, and then duck out of the way, maybe hit the body on your way out, spin around him, rinse, repeat, just go back to the jab, just nice and simple, and little patterns based off of that simplicity. And, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And Keith Thurman is very much like that. I think he's got some special effects that he can hit you moving at odd angles the way Pacquiao can, kind of a little bit off of his toes, but still being explosive and getting some power. He's still defensively vulnerable, doesn't move his head a whole hell of a lot, and can get a little bit basic. But, within that simplicity you're talking about, he can lose his variety in the way he mixes up his combinations, but particularly when he's tired, which happens to everybody. But I'll be curious. I hope it is a good test for him, because I think the guy needs rounds. He needs resistance, and I think all that's good for him as he heads into 2015. So hopefully, CT, you're right on point. You usually are. So.
Anything else for us, CT?
I want to talk about the Chavez and Bradley fight. I think that's it's a very interesting fight. I think here we have Bradley kind of want to prove himself. And he, honestly, I still believe I might be in denial, but I still think he could have had all the tools to beat Pacquiao. I just think he let all the nerves get to him. That's just my honest opinion. And some of that had to do with his legs. I mean, the way Pacquiao's skills are too, but it's something about Bradley. I always thought he could do more than he did against Pacquiao. But my point with this against Chavez, I think here we go again with another puncher where Bradley can easily outbox, but he's going to bring that warrior spirit in this woman. I can see him getting clipped with something by Chavez. Chavez has that sneaky type, you know, kind of punches, kind of awkwardly landing hard shots, kind of like he did against Thurman. And I think he's going to clip Bradley in this fight with a few punches. I'm picking Bradley to win, but I think it's going to be one of those Provnikov maybe type fights where he doesn't have the type of power that Provnikov has, but he has that type of power. I think he can get Bradley some trouble. I think he's going to be very
I'm with you about Bradley having all those tools. You know, everybody knows that I'm kind of biased when it comes to Timothy Bradley. I've been a massive fan of Timothy. I think that Timothy's one of those fighters from the late 80s to early 90s, man. He brings all of that to the table. Here's the thing about this fight. And I try to talk a little bit about on the next round, but I wanted to save some stuff here, some rant about that fight here for Leaving the Ring. Now, this is the perfect match. And I don't know what Gabriel thinks, but if you really look at when Bradley signed with Top Rank, the way to find out if he would be ready to be at 147 was to give him more of a wily style. Another Argentinian by the name of Carlos Arbargul. He was able to handle the size of that guy, was able to kind of nullify any big wild punches. He was really able to keep him off and outbox him beautifully. This is the perfect way of bringing him back from a loss. Not only because the style is almost similar, the only thing is Chavez is a little bit sharper for me, and he's smaller, which makes him a little bit more dangerous because he's not going to be winging these big old punches. It's not going to take too long for him to land. So he can land a lot quicker than Arbargul did. But the genius of what Top Rank did with this fight here is that they got a guy that fight fans don't like anymore. What happened with the Rios fight, Chavez left that fight with fight fans really turning against him by calling him a cheater. He was too rough. They just kind of really dropped him off. They wrote him off the map. They didn't want to see him anymore. To get fans behind Timothy Bradley, well, you put him in with Chavez and you make Bradley redeem what happened that night. On top of the fact that this is a style that actually works for Timothy Bradley. So it's a win-win type of situation, unless Chavez has got a completely different game plan and is stepping in with Timothy Bradley. Gabriel, what do you think? Am I way off the chart here, do you think? Or am I thinking too much into it?
I think you're reading maybe too much into it. I mean, I think it's a tough fight. I tend to think that it's just going to be an ugly fight. That I kind of lean towards what CT was saying about Diego is the kind of power that's kind of just sneaky. You know, he's got weird angles. And I could see Timothy Bradley getting popped by something strange and getting wobbled, you know. But I think after a few rounds, Timothy's going to figure him out the way Thurman did. And he's got a herky-jerky style himself. It depends on what Timothy Bradley shows up, you know. Does he want to be hit-and-run style, outbox the guy, or does he want to go in there and be rough and tumble right off the bat and show him that I can't be bullied? You know, that's kind of one of the questions I have, you know, coming into the fight. How does the fight open? If Timothy opens being kind of aggressive and pushing him back, kind of battering him, maybe he still has the possibility of turning it into a hit-and-run style fight later on and kind of trying to walk him into combinations. He is versatile like that. So, you know, it's a fight that could go a lot of ways. I just don't know how it's going to go.
I wonder how his body holds up. To tell you the truth, I mean, you know, with the injuries that he's had with Manny, I wonder how his ankles are doing. How, you know, are they going to hold up if Chavez puts on the pressure, the aggressive style, you know, the rough tactics that he brings? Can Bradley's feet and ankles hold up to something like that? Where's my? I'm blocking you from Twitter right now, Gabriel, for not agreeing with me. So you are officially blocked. CT, you're now my newfound friend. You got anything else for your brother?
Oh, just one more thing, if I can skip out.
Go ahead.
The Lee and the Carball fight, that's for the WBO title that Quillen gave up?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, I think
it
is.
Okay. They were the number one contenders, so
right.
Yeah. And Dave, I'm blocking you from making me do a show while the Rams are on. That's
I'm actually high on Carball, but I think he's very talented. I've seen what he did against the last guy he was with. And out of all the middleweights in the division, depending on how he looks against Lee, but I just think his talent alone and how his skill level is, I think he could be pretty, you know, the most competitive one against Triple G. That's just my opinion. The way his style is, his softball, he kind of dart in and out. He has some pretty good power. He changes up his speed and direction from when he punches. So I think he's pretty crafty to me. So depending on how he looks against Lee, which I took him to beat Lee, but I think it's going to be interesting.
This is a tricky
Lee's
fight, man.
To me, this is a tricky pick.
Now, you know what I mean? Not a tricky mm-hmm. fight, but a tricky pick because, you know, the thing about Andy is, like, he's so easy to hit, man. It's like if you don't hit him, you're insulting him, you know. Andy will come in. He likes to, like, he'll try to grind you down. He'll wear you out, but he's got that punch. But sometimes when he's walking into that pocket, he's taking so much punishment. You know, he takes all that punishment that you almost forget that he has arms. And I wonder if Kovalev's going to fall into that trap going like, this guy's easy to hit. I'm going to stay right here, box him, and then something comes out of nowhere from Andy Lee. To me, that's why it's a tricky pick because I just wonder if he can fall – you know, if Lee's able to make the other guy fall back in love with their output, and then bang, he gets him again. I don't know. Gabriel, what do you think?
That's just a tough fight, man. I've been trying to figure it out, you know, and I just, you know, I'm this is one that I kind of almost recuse myself from because I just like Andy, you know, and it's hard for me to bet against him. But Korobov was a guy I really liked coming out when he turned pro. And I felt like, okay, this guy looks intelligent. He looks smart with his power. Let's see what he can do. And you know, it turned out it was just kind of like a stalled career, you know. And so I wonder what he brings into this fight, you know. But I really like the way Korobov has kind of matured over the last few fights. It just seems like he's more and more sure of himself. And he's kind of a sparse fighter, almost like a Triple G, where it's just not all, you know, activity. It's just about waiting, engaging, and making your move. And sometimes that can be boring, but he's relentless. Andy Lee, he might be able to find some success in a style like that because he's not getting attacked constantly. He's not getting roughed up and like where somebody that's just trying to blitz him. That's not Korobov's style. And they're also both southpaws. And so I kind of wonder who's going to adjust to that better. Andy's been with all kinds of top-level guys, being the Kronks, kind of
right.
gatekeeper in a sense for years while he was being developed with Emmanuel Stewart. And Emmanuel, clear as day, I remember, I don't know if Steve mentioned this, he's mentioned this before, you know, where we talk about how much he liked Andy Lee and like talking about the bar after Pablo Taylor too, and like, oh, this, you know, nobody could beat Andy Lee as far as he was concerned. And so I wonder, you know, I mean, that was an electrifying knockout, but he was losing that fight, his last fight.
Right.
With Andy. So I don't know. I think it's a coin flip. I lean towards Korobov, though, but Andy could surprise us. You know, this is what he thinks he was destined for. So does Korobov. So I just think it's going to be a great fight. I kind of want to ruin it by picking.
There you go. CT, thanks for calling in, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598, or you could tweet us at Leaving the Ring. Let's go. Let me see. Go real quick. Richard Cruz here. He said, is Mononagi hiding, trying to get a Pacquiao fight by stating he can beat Pacquiao now, or is he being serious? I don't know. I don't even know if Paulie really even knows what he's talking about. I even put this on Twitter. Until he starts making sense, I'll start listening. You know, he's all over the place. He's not on one subject. You know, he's back in here, back in there. Let me tell you this, okay? I had a conversation with Paulie back in the days, and this was all stemming up with the Porter thing, and I reached out to him. If you go back a month ago, he had said for me to check his facts and et cetera. You know, you need to get your facts straight. You need to, you know, get a source. And I had to point out to him, well, Paulie, you are my source. You are the person I was talking with. So I don't think this kid knows exactly what comes out of his mouth. So I don't know if that's what he's looking for. And I don't see that happening, to tell you the truth. So. Yeah, I think he talks a little bit too much that he should stay reserved at some times. But I don't know. What do you think, Gabriel?
I think he's not consistent. And you know, it's kind of like when I talked to Andre Ward and I asked him, you know, I need your help. And I need you guys to stand up for a clean sport. And I know it's your money, or, you know, we figure out some way to get it sponsored or whatever. And, you know, it's always like next fight, you know, it's not the right time or at the appropriate time, we'll do it. Nobody, you know, it's never been the appropriate time in my life to stand up for this particular issue. You know, it interrupted my life in a lot of ways, you know, and with Paulie, I just think he's not very consistent. And he keeps saying how long he's talked about this thing, but yeah, what have you done? I could point, and I actually thought this hadn't happened, but apparently it has. I could point to the 4-to-1 TE ratio in Nevada and say I was the writer that first pointed out it was 6-to-1 and that was a problem, and I kept banging on that, and now it's 4-to-1. I can say that. Paulie is a guy who brags to me about his money and all the women he slept with, which, you know, I'm married. I found my perfect mate, so I'm not really sweating that. And I don't really think of women as, you know, notches on a belt either. I just color me old school. I treat people with respect. But this is a guy who brags about all his money. Well, then sponsor some drug testing. And that's, you know, the guy who knocks on, Victor Conte, who I don't want to turn into Victor's spokesperson or his apologist, so some people think I am. But that guy's paid for sponsorships. And he's also had another athlete that he didn't pay for that's been tested for like 3 years, and that's Marlena Sparza, who, female Olympian. She's, you know, a medal winner. She just won the world championships in her division. She's been tested by USADA. So, like, when people dog him, oh, he's the dirtiest guy. Really? That's weird, because this last week there was a big story about the NFL drug testing policy. This is mainstream sports. It's not, you know, dirty, toilet water boxing. This is the NFL, which is, you know, big-time corporate toilet water, but, you know, mainstream nonetheless. Victor's one of the sources. Don Catlin's one of the sources. There's all these top people kind of saying, yeah, this is true about the drug testing policy, and breaking it down by looking at the document. You know, people act like I was the first guy to make that guy my source. Steve was the first guy in boxing. I stayed with the drug testing thing because it interested me, and that was about it. It drives me crazy, you know, that all the talk that Paulie does when he came on the show and called you and I vigilantes, but didn't have the guts to really call it what it was, what he was really talking about specifically. It was just this kind of, I just don't think you got to say the vigilantism. What are you talking about? It's activism. You know, you look at journalism these days, who's, all the things that happen, like when John Pascal said that he hacked my emails and was going to print my emails, no one had any outrage whatsoever. No one didn't, you know, no one cared. Now, there's a big story out right now, and I'll just kind of get off this rant, but the company Uber, you know, that everybody takes those things, takes their cars and their private drivers and all that, that company's suffering because one of their CEOs said, hey, we're going to spend like $1 million to go on a campaign to dig up dirt on journalists who write bad stories about us. It's become a major thing, and that company is like falling all apart in some respects in the public eye because of that. But look at the way boxing acts. When the fighters do that, we're all just happy. Oh, look, that guy told Gabe Montoya what's what on Twitter. Oh, ha, ha. And you forget that, like, you know, I actually did break these stories. Like, I broke the Antonio Tarver story, Rafael Cavalcante story. Those weren't VADA-tested fights. Like, my legitimacy speaks for itself. So you ask me what I think about Paulie. I think he's a fraud. I think when he come at me and calls me a fake journalist and a wannabe actor, he doesn't know what he's talking about, for one. I've seen you act, Paulie. But two, you know, my stories, nobody's trashed them. Nobody's made me retract. I know that one kid tried, but, you know, he kind of left out a big chunk of the whole premise. So it kind of made the whole thing fall apart because you can't, you know, fit a square truth into a round hole, no matter how hard you try. I think Paulie needs to put his money where his mouth is and shut the hell up about Pacquiao. Because bottom line is, when I asked him straight up, and the difference between me and Paulie is I've actually asked Pacquiao to his face if he's ever used drugs, and I went into specifics. Paulie's never done that, apparently. Can't look Freddie in the eye and ask him about it. I've asked Freddie about it. That's the difference. But Paulie needs to put his money where his mouth is. Maybe even talk to Victor Conte, who would set him straight on a lot of things. About what Victor says about him and the way he treats him. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's just Paulie's ignorance. This idea that I'm tweeting at him to get famous. I mean, boxing's a niche sport. The longer I don't work on the beat and I kind of just go do my own thing and work in, like, talking to tech people and theater people and all kinds of different people in this city, the more I realize that boxing doesn't matter to the rest of the world. So that whole notion is just ridiculous. You got me. You asked me a question about it, but nobody really asked about it, and everybody kind of lets it lie when Paulie talks to me. I mean, all the things I broke down, those are stories. Paulie calling Golden Boy Promotions and Al Heyman worse than the mob, quote unquote, before a fight, and not saying it was off the record, saying it to me. And Steve confirmed it the other day. Wrote down the exact date where it was before Con Molina. Why isn't that a story? It's a pretty major story. The boxing media needs to grow some balls and actually start covering this sport and calling people on their integrity and stop letting them call out people of integrity, you know, leaving us out on the street like Margaret Goodman and myself.
Thanks a lot, Robert Cruz.
So,
all right.
Yeah,
right,
it's a question.
There you go.
It's all raining outside, Dave. It feels like everybody hates Monday. So that's my rant. There you go.
There you go. Everybody hates Monday.
Here
on Leaving the Ring. 347-215-7598. Don't forget to download the app. We're doing a lot of changes on that app. If you look at it now for a couple of weeks, you're gonna see things moving around. We're just trying to make it a lot more simple, and for people could actually use the functions that we put on there on the app, the features. So keep going and looking at that app and see the new things that we're adding on. We got a voicemail, fan chat. You can take pictures. You do all kinds of things. Yeah. The whole works on there. You can leave your Everybody Hates Monday rant on there. Excuse me, on the app. Let's pass in some more fight fans. 347-215-7598. Let's talk boxing here on Leaving Ring. Let's go with area code 787. You're on live right now on Leaving Ring. What's on your mind?
Yo, it's Rob. What up, man?
What up, Rob?
What's up?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's been a while since I've tried this, okay? But I've been working on it today. People know I can do the Claudi, but I've been working on my Malignaggi today, all right? So check this out.
Go ahead.
Manufacturer needs to realize that there's an A side and an A side. He doesn't really want to fight with McFloyd. You know, you got to look at things how they are. You know, this is worse than the mob right now, okay? That guy doesn't want to fight.
Wow, that's pretty good, man.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I will be holding some auditions later in the year, early next year there, Rob.
I think right now. Hey, I think right now Rob proved that he's a much better actor than Paulie.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I watched one interview and I just had to do it. That was just too much.
The pitch is there, and the herky jerkiness of the speed with which he speaks is there too. It's very good, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I put a whole 2 hours into that. You know. But. No, man, I'm excited for his fight with that fire hydrant too. But I'm looking at this Chavez fight. You know, everybody already talked about the Khan fight. I think Khan's gonna win based off of Devin's demeanor. You know, Devin's going in there. He kind of looks like he's taken a few tough losses. Like I don't really think he has. He hasn't taken a loss that's like damaged his career or anything like that. But you know, he kind of you see those big banners. You see Khan with the suit and how they're talking it up. And you see kind of Devin has accepted the role of a challenger. You know, he's not really acting like he's a contender in the fight. You know, so that speaks big
that's
to me. But that's subjective.
Well, let me ask you this, though, because, I mean, everything that's going on in, in Missouri, in Ferguson, St. Louis, the Rams, you know, came out with the hands up, don't shoot. And really, I think they were the ones that opened up the I can't breathe door. Like, they're the reason that everybody else is kind of stepping forward now. I mean, maybe not just because the Rams, but I'm a little, like, biased for the Rams the way I am but for Felix Trinidad. But it was certainly the first guys, and now everybody else is doing it. And I think it's... I wonder if Devin, if that's going to inspire him, if that's going to push him a little bit. And maybe that's why he's being quiet. It'd be interesting to see what he comes out wearing, you know. Khan wearing, like $60,000, like 24-karat gold trunks, and everybody's talking about the Mayweather fight and the foregone conclusion. That kind of scares the hell out of me for Amir Khan. It just sounds like a dude looking to, you know, it's like Prince Nassim Ahmed coming in on that hoop and then getting hit by a corona, you know, on the way in against Barrera.
Yeah, Khan is definitely, you know, Khan has that plague about him where he kind of gets one fight away from a big fight and gets knocked out. man, it's funny when Khan gets knocked out. I'm just thinking of the face he made when he was on slow motion going down against Garcia. But, Khan is he's weird because he has all the talent, but his chin is just, it's like Dave said, his footwork doesn't match his hand speed. And I'm not really I'm not really too much into that fight because, like I said, it looks like they've accepted their roles going into the match. Same thing with Abner Mars and that dude he's fighting, Ramirez or Rivera. That dude, like, he just came in there looking all scruffy and stuff. Like, he's like, you know, he's just there to pick up a paycheck. but I'm excited for the Chavez fight. Oh, the Chavez fight? Is that his name? I don't even remember these people's names. I don't know what's wrong with me. Bradley. The dude Bradley's fighting. I think it's Chavez, right?
Right.
Is it Chavez?
Bradley versus Chavez.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paulie, I did the impression and it's sticking with me now. Now I'm, like, going semi-retarded. But Chavez, he comes in and I think he has a good chance based off of Bradley's. He seems kind of unrealistic, and he's really confident all the time now. He's not the same person that, you know, called in to leave it in the ring way back in the day. And it kind of concerns me how much he changed personality-wise, it seems, with media and stuff like that. So I think Chavez has a good fight. And Benavidez?
He's changed. You know what it is about his change of attitude is that he doesn't want to accept the fact that he doesn't have a bad boy image. He really wants to be embraced by boxing fans so much that he's fighting who he really is. You know, he's this kind of like, I was going back and listening to like old interviews we did with him. And one of them I came across is when we had him on when he was about to face Nate Campbell. And Nate Campbell was on there. Remember that?
Yeah.
And Nate Campbell started making fun of him. Because Timothy had bad reception. He was telling him, like, hey, man, you need to get rid of those metros and stuff. You know, you need to get yourself an AT&T phone. And like, everybody was laughing at Timothy, the listeners, people, you know, that were on the chat room. And Timothy didn't know how to really kind of break out and just kind of, you know, go at Nate Campbell. I think that's what he struggles the most nowadays is that he's got this attitude. It's just it's not the Timothy of the old. This new Timothy is a lot more different. You know, I don't know. I think you know what I'm talking about, Gabriel. I've talked to you about this. You know, it's like.
Well, I think too that he's experienced the media in a way that only a guy that wins a close fight that everybody thinks he lost can experience. You know, and it's, you know, people dog him for that fight. But it isn't like he got, to me, absolutely dominated. It was a nip-and-tuck close fight.
Right.
Particularly watching it again on TV, like, live out of crappy seats. So, like, I can't really say. You know, I felt like Pacquiao won. It looked like Pacquiao was winning. I was watching, you know, as much as I could. And I was only, like, 12th row, so it wasn't that bad of a seat. But still, you know, and so, I mean, the people really dogged him, and they got really negative. And I think, too, that a lot of people just don't take a step back and realize, like, during that period, that's the beginning of Twitter and where everybody's starting to really interact. And a lot of the trolls are, like, 5 years ahead of everybody else when it comes to learning how to use the Internet. And so they're just there waiting to troll guys like Tim Bradley and talk some shit and upset them. You know, it's like Paulie used to be the TK, the Twitter king, then he's social media king. And then he was like, oh, I'm not going to go on Twitter anymore because, you know, everybody's shitting on me. And then now, you know. He's a guy, he's like fucking, they should call him, you know, Paulie Ramanaji, because he's like Mitt Romney the way he flip-flops on things. But, you know, you just look at it, and that's what Tim went through, was getting kind of beat up by the media after Pacquiao, and you could see him turn there. And then also the money got so big, I imagine everybody wanting a piece of him became kind of intense. And it's that, you know, you see it a lot with guys that get to the top, and it's hard to navigate it. Now he doesn't have Cameron Duncan. He has his wife managing things and another guy that's like financially advising. And that's all very telling. You know, I wonder what that translates to into the ring. I think Tim's just a good, hardworking dude. And I think he's frustrated by the fact that that can't be enough. You know,
yeah, I wanted to ask you guys.
Or a good guy.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you guys, because is this the same Benavidez that, used to call into the show before and had that documentary coming out a few years ago?
Yeah.
I don't know was it a documentary that was coming out? I don't remember the documentary, but we have had him on a few times. But we had him and Eric Gomez when they were right about to sign, you know, with both of their outfits or who they were going to get involved with. So we've had Jose from the beginning as well as Gomez and stuff. But yeah, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
I remember him being lined up mm-hmm. for really big things in his career. Like, I think a lot of people forgot, like, because when I saw his name, I was like, that can't be the same dude, because he kind of just went MIA. And I was like, that can't be the same dude. If that's the same dude, then I'm going to watch this fight, because that kid was, like, lined up for really big things.
He was lined up.
He was very mature in the gym, right, man. I mean, I was very impressed watching him fight with Khan, and just seeing him, he just looked like he belonged. And like, oh, man, this guy's going to be good. But I think the power isn't quite that devastating, and he just never learned how to fight tall for the whole time. And then we saw him get hurt at, like, the step-up center, like, at the end of a fight, like, a few fights back. And just, you know, I mean, he'd already kind of fallen off at that point. So I don't know what's going on.
You got to mention, too, though, he's had, you know, injuries that set him back. That's what kept him away from the ring as well.
That's true.
You know, so there's some setbacks that he has had. You know, the thing about it, I think the thing about the kid, that there's nothing to take away that his poise is really good for his age. He's got good boxing skill. He's got a great jab. He knows how to get his – he knows his way around the ring. That's a big definite. But Mauricio is a big major step up, especially when Mauricio is faced. You know, like I said, he is a kid that really has went through the schooling properly of getting where he's at. And to obtain his position for not having a lot of power and understanding that he's got to make things happen. You know what I'm saying? Mauricio's got to make things happen in there. He's really good about that. And that's what Jose is going to have to really be, I think. And to me, he's got to be the best he's ever looked, Gabriel. I don't know what you think, but I think he has to be on his tip-top game going in with Mauricio Herrera.
The thing with Herrera, you need, above all, like, I think is, well, two things. You need a steady jab, and it's got to be a double. Got to be down the middle. You're going to change levels with it. But really, you're going to be layman like for the chest, I think, for a lot of it. Because he's
right.
Very jerky with that upper body. But you can just set like a metronome, and you got to set that distance, and you control that distance with the jab. But I think also that you have to be in rhythm yourself, because Mauricio gets that kind of weird kind of bounce, you know, that it's not really weird. It's kind of like old school fighters get. Frankie Duarte used to talk to me about it at Fortune Gym, training people, and he would talk about these fighters today don't have that bounce. And they're just kind of little bounce in their knees, and everything's kind of moving. And so, like, your hands and all of it's in rhythm and tandem as you're moving. Instead of, these guys are very stiff today. They take these tiny little steps, and everybody's upright and ready to spring instead of being like a free-flowing machine. And that's the maestro at his best, you know, and I think that Benavidez has to be a counterpoint to that a bit. Take a little steam off the punches, except for the jab. That can snap at all times. Everything else should be kind of in that mid-range of power until you really see something. You're not going to knock this guy out. You want some activity, and you want to touch him up as much as you can, get to the body hard. If you had to throw anything hard, do it to the body. Everything else, wait to the second half of the fight and see if you've done your work to set up anything, see if you've earned that. But you're right, Dave. All that is the best fight that Jose Benavidez Jr. Will have ever fought if he's successful.
You know, the way to beat Mauricio Herrera is not an easy task. First off, you know, Mauricio can jab to the stomach. He can time you when you're coming in. He throws a beautiful open book overhand, right hand over the top. He knows how to get around your gloves, you know, when you try to guard up on him. The only way I see Benavidez getting the lead or getting the push start of creating something that is going to benefit him into those later rounds, Gabriel, is that he's got to be first in everything. He's got to be first with his jab. He's got to make sure that jab comes back directly to cover the side of his face so that, because you know that Mauricio is going to time him. He's going to look for that lazy jab to come back, and he's going to come over the top. So he's got to make sure he brings that arm right back to the side of his face. The other thing is throwing that right hand and not being shy about it. Maybe sometimes overusing it so that he could set up with a finished left hook, because he can, you know, I always tell kids in the gym, don't throw punches to throw them. Understand that each punch is to set something up. You're trying to maneuver the guy in a position where you can hit them. That's the science of boxing. So in a lot of ways, this is a major step up for Jose Benavidez. But then again, Benavidez hasn't showed me he's not a smart kid. He has showed me he's got some intellectual in that ring, but he's going in there with somebody that's a bit more calmer, who's been in the real thick of the mud when it comes to fighting some grindy fighters, and who really is not going to be disturbed in what you're going to bring to him. So my take is Jose's got to be first and push Mauricio Herrera back. I don't know if he could do that. We've never seen him really do that. But that would be the key in my part for him to be successful and gaining a lot of points and even possibly hurting Mauricio Herrera. Not knocking him out, but definitely hurting him where it makes Mauricio be a little gun shy and gets him off of his rhythm. What do you think, Gabriel?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to knock out Herrera.
No, I don't think so either.
I think
there's
he
no
needs
way.
To. I think those things will help. Again, the first clinch always, you know, tells me something, you know, that who's the dominant man physically, you know. So I think that'll be important, you know. And he's got to win those. He's got to let the other guy know he's in with a smaller guy. He's in with the blue chip prospect. He's not in with somebody that's supposed to lose. But, you know, I would say that Danny Garcia is a much more fluid guy, much more well-put-together fighter than Benavidez is at this point, at least what they've shown in fights. And he really struggled with Herrera. And they're kind of similar in that they're both very good boxers, or can be, but, you know, they don't have, like, power, the equalizer. I think Danny probably has more of an equalizer, that left hook, than anything Benavidez has got. So, you know, I just wonder, you know, how do they make weight? That's going to be the other thing. You know, Mauricio makes it pretty well. Seems to always have good energy. Jose is a taller kid, and he's getting to an age where his body could be maturing and changing and wanting to go up. So that's going to be, you know, weight, how they made it, that's going to be key.
I agree. I got Mauricio Herrera, you know, winning by decision. I don't think it's going to be a close win. I think what's going to happen is that the corner, this is really where we find out the corner men and how well they're able to motivate and get their fighter through rounds. This is not just on Jose. It's going to be on his dad, on the second assistant. It's going to be there's a lot of things in my eyes that come into play because Mauricio Herrera is one of the best at 140. You know, it's a really tough fight. Hey, let's talk a little bit about I don't even know if there's really much to talk about here. Issa Smith versus and we're going to wrap it up in a few seconds here. Issa Smith versus Arislandi Lara. What are your thoughts about this? To me, honestly, I would have liked this fight maybe 2 years ago. Now it's kind of like all right, it's there, but it's something that really just didn't even need to happen.
You know, it's weird, you know. I think it depends on what H.G. Smith shows up. You know, if he's going to be kind of like the hunt and peck artist, staying away, kind of boxing a little bit, then that guy, I would say, is going to get just, you know, boxed to a decision. I think if Ishii is aggressive in spots, maybe he can have some success and then open up some boxing for himself later. But he just looked like he's kind of been reluctant as of late. And so I think it's Lara's fight to lose. He's a good, solid fighter. I'd like to see him do more offensively. But I think it's just his fight to lose. And I think it depends on what Ishii Smith shows up is going to be the tenor of the fight.
You know, I think what it is, too, with Issa Smith is you got to – I think what you have to – factor in his age factor as well, that he was shelved up for quite some time. You know, he wasn't getting any fights here, where Laura has been. He's been gelling, you know, he's been fighting here and there, and he's been fighting some of the best out there, no matter what people say. I strongly believe he won that fight with Canelo. It should have went to him, but there was a whole reason behind why he didn't get that fight. Smith has got to, you know, he's got to be the aggressor. He's got to really close that gap pretty quick. And I'm not sure if he could do that right now, Gabriel. I think that his legs are going to be too old. I think Laura's going to be able to really keep his jab and the outside, you know, not ever really get himself into danger. And I don't think there's going to be an urgency to get Smith out of there. It's not his temperament. It is his temperament on Twitter, but it's definitely, it doesn't always transcend into the ring. So it's really up to Smith to try to take advantage of that. But I don't see that happening at all. Tonight, they're going to have on a special for ESPN fights, which is really all the Heyman's display. It's really nothing big. This is really just to keep these guys active. I think the only fight that's really interesting out of the whole bunch is Antonio Tarver against Jonathan Banks. But, you know, it's just, to me, it's more of a fill them in, get some fights out there before the end of the year. Hopefully we get some good fights out of that. But I still see my pick is Jonathan Banks. I don't know what your pick is against that with Antonio Tarver and Jonathan Banks here, but I'm going to go with Jonathan Banks.
I'm going Tarver. I just think, you know, the last time Banks fought, he it was a very curious performance against Seth Mitchell. And it just seemed like he didn't want to finish the guy off. And that's a Heyman fighter. And now here he is fighting another Heyman fighter trying to fight at heavyweight. Because I think really that the fight here, if Tarver beats Banks, at some point maybe Tarver Wilder, you know, if you get, you know, Stavern's around, that's a name, you know, that you can kind of keep around and maybe sell. And so I think that's the fight, you know, as horrible as that sounds. I think everything's kind of leaning towards Tarver.
There you go. Here on Leaving the Ring, we didn't get to your call. We apologize. We'll get back to you next week. Don't forget, every Monday now. What am I going? Every Monday night, you got the next round. And I want to thank everybody that's been giving me that's really loved and received the intro for the next round. I just put something up really quick and, you know, kind of playing with it to see if anybody will like it. And I've been getting a lot of feedback from our Gmail and even on Twitter and stuff. But so, anyways, every Tuesday night, don't forget the Boxeo Tijuana Radio is on the app, as well as we're refreshing up the app, changing a lot of things on there. So see some changes, you know, weekly. You're going to see some new things on there as well. So don't forget to download that. Also, too, just a quick announcement here. So I was speaking to our sponsor, Strive, and 2015 looked like it's going to be the year for us to have some Strive apparel, you know, some shirts, some hats, as well as workout gear. There's going to be some Leaving the Ring workout gear. Again, every Thursday night here, same time, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, Leaving the Ring. Don't forget to call in. Don't forget to tweet us. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram. And if you want to email us, you absolutely can. If you didn't get a chance to call in and ask us a question live or put your input or your pick live, go to the app and you can leave us a voicemail there for either guy, David Duenas, Gabriel Montoya, Steve Kim, or even our writers, Brian Fogg and Lenny. All guys, have a great night. Enjoy the weekend. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer.
Peace.